I'm Karen Hartglass. We're back. It is May 14th, 2013, and I want to say it really is May 14th because the first half of this show I pre-recorded yesterday, so it really wasn't May 14th, but now it is, unless you're listening sometime in the future. But it's a beautiful Tuesday, spring day here in New York, and it's good to breathe. Really nice breathing going on. How are you today? Well, let's go on to the next part of the show. I can't wait, really, so let's just get started. I'm bringing back Kathy Stevens, founder and director of the Catskill Animal Sanctuary. She spent her childhood on a Virginia horse farm. She moved to Boston for graduate school, and after a decade of teaching high school English, she was asked to head a charter school. Instead, 1 year later, she opened Catskill Animal Sanctuary, one of the country's leading havens for farm animals and a center for raising public awareness of their sentience and suffering. She's the author of two critically and popularly acclaimed books, Where the Blind Horse Sings and Animal Camp, a blogger on farm animal issues for the Huffington Post, and a frequent contributor to books and articles on farm animals, vegan living, and related issues. She's an avid reader, loves to hike, swim, and bike, and spends rare quiet time with her close friends. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, Karen. So happy to be back with you. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm glad we got everything all lined up here and everything is working. I hear you. You hear me. Everybody hears us.
Oh, technology.
That's right, and I got your book after much ado, and I didn't realize this at first, but this is a revision of Animal Camp.
This is a revision of Animal Camp. The publisher said they wanted to do a paperback, and I responded with an enthusiastic, oh, no, because it was 3 years old. The hardcover was 3 years old, and A, we are having a different conversation about veganism, as you know, than we were just 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And
yep.
B, Catskill Animal Sanctuary is only 10 years old, and so much has happened in the last 3 years that I felt like a paperback, the same book, would be dated and stale. So I asked if I could do a revision, and I did a very major revision. It feels like essentially a new book, so I was very pleased that they let us do that.
Right. Well, some of the important things, or what's important about this book, amongst other things, are the individual stories. And the individual stories about so many of the animals that you've gotten to know. And those never get old. Those never change. And we need to retell those stories and reread those stories. So I was happy to reread some of them because I read them when they first came out and they were lovely then. And I was glad to reread them.
Thanks.
But, I was talking about this morning, but, we throw out the numbers, we throw out all kinds of information just to get people to think about what we're doing to animals. And a lot of it has to do with, well, you'll feel so much better if you don't eat them and you eat plant foods and it's better for the environment. And it makes me really wonder about humanity when they don't connect the dots and realize what it is they're supporting. But this book is really important, and telling stories is really the way I think we change people.
Karen, I agree. I feel like we've gotten really good for a whole lot of reasons, a whole lot of people working so hard at this that deserve credit, you included, but we've got podcasts, we've got blogs, we've got documentaries, from undercover footage to people out there just with their individual cat, you know, little, whatever you call it, flip cans. You've got, protests at the tremendous work of organizations like Toronto Pig Save, who are protesting and, you know, doing peaceful vigils outside slaughterhouses every day. You've got all the medical information out there. You've got all the information on global warming. So I feel like there's, again, far more than just 3 years ago, there's so much more awareness of these three very compelling reasons to move toward a plant-based diet: human health, the suffering of the animals, and the environmental reasons. But the fourth reason is not discussed, and that is who these animals are. So
yep.
I feel like that's the important work of sanctuaries, and that's what I try to, more than anything else, have my books do.
Well, I think when people look in an animal's eyes and have that opportunity to connect, many people are definitely moved. But I think it's still part of this human evolution because we definitely have a long way to go. Mm-hmm. And not only do we treat animals terribly, but we treat ourselves terribly. We treat our friends and families and neighbors and countrymen and foreigners and knock ourselves all the time, and we really need to evolve and come from a place of love.
Yeah, we sure do. And yet, despite all that you just said, which I agree with, I also believe that there is an inherent goodness in all of us, and that being among these animals draws it out. And the challenge for us at CAS is to really just back up enough. People don't need the statistics. They don't, you know, they just need moments with the animals to get in touch with that humanity again that we leave behind sometimes in our drive to succeed.
You know, I reread your stories and read some new ones, and I couldn't help but thinking that all of these animal characters are so much like people I know one way or another. And the only thing that's really different, other than the fact that they look different, is that they communicate in a different way. And we can learn so much from being with animals and communicating with animals to learn how we really should communicate with each other.
Oh, my goodness. You know, we have a T-shirt that says, and I use this sentence a lot when I speak, in the ways that truly matter, we are all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that that's true. I know that that's true. I know that the differences between myself and a pig or myself and a chicken are about as meaningful as the differences between myself and a Latina or myself and an African American or myself and an Orthodox Jew. You know, they're superficial differences.
Mm-hmm.
They're communicating all the time, and the more we're around them, the more we
learn their language.
Their language.
I keep thinking of this Dr. Doolittle song, If I Could Talk to the Animals.
To the animals, yes.
And I mentioned that because we recently included that song in our new Swingin' Gourmets project, and it's a ridiculous song, but I really started thinking about it.
Well, and here is the interesting thing, what that I don't think I would have been, I don't think I was consciously aware of this until we started this work, and certainly a decade into it, it's perfectly obvious now. If you are paying attention to an animal and communicating with the animal that you want to understand what he or she is trying to say, they figure out a way. I don't care what the animal is. I don't care if it's a chicken or a pig. They figure out a way to tell you what's on their mind, whether it's a sound or stepping on your foot or rubbing up against you or a growl. They're nuanced. Sheep are remarkably communicative animals, for instance. So we just need to slow down a little and listen and watch and learn from them.
Well, what you just said opening this whole paragraph was, if we pay attention and if we really want to communicate and understand, those two big mouthfuls right there, we need to be mindful with everyone, human, non-human, and mm-hmm. if we really want to understand, we can. It's that simple.
Yeah,
you just have to want to. So 3 years have gone by since Animal Camp first came out, and a lot of changes have taken place at Catskill Animal Sanctuary. Can you give us a little virtual audio tour of what's new?
Sure. When we first opened, we had 80 acres, and we converted a very, very, very forlorn, neglected property, and we now have 80 beautiful acres with 30 barns or outbuildings on it, two big ponds, nice, big, spacious pastures with lots of shade trees. The greater expansion, though, has come in our programming. In the last 3 years, we've started a day camp for children called Camp Kindness. We've got a wonderful certified humane educator coming up from the city to spend the summer with us. We're really excited to launch a new camp program this summer. We have a program called Compassionate Cuisine that wasn't around 3 years ago. This is its third year. And we feel like so many people, way more than 3 years ago, are willing or eager to begin or accelerate this journey and just need to have their hands held. So our classes range from everything, literally the simplest, most basic Vegan is for Dummies, Vegan 101, the most basic I don't know what to put on my plate if I take the chicken off, the most basic class like that, to classes for pretty accomplished vegan chefs who just want to expand their repertoire. So that's another new piece. And we're also reaching out even more to the schools. I know that you and Rip mentioned, so exciting, the first public school in the country to go all vegetarian, yep. PS 244. Well, they are coming here for the day.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Everybody's getting involved with that school.
I wept when I read it online, and Amy Hamlin mm-hmm. has spoken here before, and I thought, these kids need to feel like my dad would say, like $1 million.
Right.
That would be the expression my dad would use. Because they have done something, participating in something extraordinary, and we want to make them feel that. So I'm so excited. We're busy designing the day. We've got five former teachers showing up to help us, and it's going to be really special.
I like it. I like it very much. I'm really, really curious to see what comes of what's going on with that school, and just hoping that it goes viral and other schools sign up.
Yeah, I hope so too.
One of the things in your book I had a little smirk on my face about was this this table you compared vealfarming.com statements on this website about veal farming, and you gave your commentary. And if only we could do that all the time when we see commercials and media from the stuff that's spewed out by a variety of different companies.
Yeah, the Dairy Council, et cetera. Absolutely. Well, I don't even know how I found out about that website, but I did find out about vealfarming.com, and they're lying. There's no polite
They're lying.
Way.
They're lying. They're lying.
They're lying.
That's it. They're lying.
They're lying. I mean, I can't even remember the specifics in my book, but my jaw dropped, and I thought, I've got to put this in the book just for people to see how distorted these marketing campaigns are. I also have been thinking a lot recently about how successful that anti-veal campaign was. I don't know if you remember, Karen. I have the vaguest recollection of this. Like, the Humane Farming Association took out whole-page ads playing on public sympathy because these animals are slaughtered as babies. Well, guess what? Chickens are 42 days old. They're 7 weeks old. They are babies. They still have their little baby, their little pee-pee peep, their little baby peep, chirp, and they still have their blue eyes when they go to slaughter. Pigs are 4 or 5 months old. They're babies. Mm-hmm. But the big guns, you know, the PETAs and the HSUSs, the people who would really have the dollars to get behind a campaign like that for on behalf of pigs and cows for whatever reason, I mean pigs and chickens for whatever reason haven't done that, and I think that's something that needs to be exploited for the benefit of the animals.
Well, any kind of clever advertising is going to sway people, and I don't remember the ad specifically for veal, but I remember it being powerful because people still today say, oh, I don't eat veal, because they remember those were the babies.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean,
and then you wonder, well, what else are you eating?
Veal consumption has dropped by 75%.
So what? I remember reading that in your book, and I asked myself this question, so I'm going to ask you. And I know the dairy industry is linked to veal production because we can't have milk unless we make a cow pregnant, unless the cow is brutally raped and artificially inseminated and made pregnant. And she has a baby. So what are happening to all those babies? Because we're making a lot more milk.
Well, what people don't know, it was in part because of the success of this campaign that we assume that veal calves are grown in crates, confined, fed in a diet that makes them anemic, all the stuff that was talked about in this probably the most successful animal welfare campaign in the history of this country. Mm-hmm. What people don't know is a majority of calves who are turned into veal are slaughtered almost immediately after birth, within a couple weeks of birth, and for some reason that's not talked about or understood, and but it is referred to as bob veal, B-O-B veal. So that's what happens, and I don't, you know, there just hasn't been a whole lot of attention to it.
Bob veal, lovely, calves that are slaughtered when only a few days old. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to happy stories in the book, because I can't spend a moment there. One piece of good news I saw today was that the governor in Tennessee vetoed their ag gag rule that they had
there. Yes, good job. I saw that too.
Yes.
That's
so we have to really celebrate those wonderful things.
Yeah, we sure do.
Now, there are some celebrity characters throughout your book, like Rambo and Tucker. Rambo, of course, is no longer with us.
Right.
But who are some of the newer characters that we don't hear about in the book? I imagine there might be some new characters that have just joined you.
Well, there are. On the cover, they arrived in time to be photographed for the cover, but not in time for me to include a chapter, is a little guy named Zeke, who is a lap sheep. We took in 14 sheep from an illegal slaughter operation. A guy was not licensed by the USDA and was slaughtering animals in his backyard.
Hmm.
And we took in 14 sheep, and we couldn't get within a couple hundred feet of us. They were absolutely terrified for good reason. And they have become, I don't know, like golden retrievers, that they follow us around. They insist on sort of draping their heads over our shoulders. They nibble at our faces. And this, I think, goes back to my strongest desire to use this place and my books to help people experience animals in a new way. And Karen, one thing, I was talking with Chris Carr today. I'm sure you know her name.
Yeah, I saw the post that you were on this morning. You're busy.
Busy days. You know, it's like busy days when a book is just coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But her audience, and I suspect the same is true in large part about your audience, people who want to eat well are conscious people, and conscious mm-hmm. people, I think, in general, are people who are trying hard to be good people, to be kind people. And we don't intend for our meat and dairy-based diets to be, for our eating to be an act of cruelty. It's certainly a very uncomfortable way to look at eating. And yet, when we eat a meat and dairy-based diet, you're subjecting an animal, I've told a little few of these stories, who is very much more like you than different.
Mm-hmm.
As in 10 chickens are as individual as 10 humans. 10 chickens will pick their friends just like we choose our friends. They play. They have a wide emotional range. Pain and suffering feel the same to them as they do to us. So you go down this path in this sanctuary work, and you learn about these animals in the way that people, we know these animals in the way that people know their children.
Mm-hmm.
We're with them every single day. And so I don't think what I just said is true. I know that what I said is true. And so I encourage your conscious, educated people trying to live a life of kindness and integrity to look at what I just said and to consider that they're subjecting animal after animal after animal, when they eat a meat and dairy-based diet, to a life that you wouldn't wish upon the vilest human being you could conjure up if you tried.
Let's just take that in and think about it one more time. Yep, I'll consider it. I'm doing it.
You're doing it. You're doing it, and you're helping lots of other people do it, so good on you.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, once you, well, for most of us, but once we're at this place, it's hard to imagine doing anything else, and that's part of my challenge in sharing this information with people is I just don't understand why people do what they do.
You don't? I do.
You do?
Yeah. I mean, look, for some people, food is an addiction.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are big marketing dollars behind making sure that it is. For some people, you know, it's part of our family culture. It's part of our traditions. It's a lack of knowledge about how to cook differently. It's buying into the myth that you have to have animal-based protein.
You know, it's like you said earlier that you believe there's all this good in all of us. And I believe there's this greatness in all of us, this great good. And that's what makes it hard for me, because I know every individual has this power to be really spectacular and kind and compassionate.
Yeah. And if we could just sort of stay focused on the fact that one of these days all of us are going to be in our rocking chairs looking back.
Mm-hmm.
And don't we want to know that we gave it our best shot? Don't we want to know that?
Yeah,
and isn't part of that being the kindest possible person? We have the gift. I always joke. I always say, you could have been a rock. You could have been algae. You could have been a dandelion. The greatest gift one can receive is to receive a human body. Like, don't waste it. Don't throw it away. Use it to do good, to get clear about what drives you, to get clear about what speaks to your heart, and to do good in this life.
Well, that just about sums it up, Kathy. We're at the end of the show. Thank you again for joining me. Your website again is
casanctuary.org. The book is available on the website, on Amazon, and it can be ordered through your independent bookstore.
Okay, and I hope to see you up at the sanctuary this summer. It's one of my favorite places to go.
Karen, please come visit. Yeah, I want to talk about Swingin' Gourmet. Thank you for your great, great work.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, ciao.
Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to It's All About Food, and I am Karen Hartkless. Thank you for joining me. Send me emails at info@realmeals.org. Love to hear from you. And remember, have a delicious week.